namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. It was being discussed that the varieties of the Supreme can be perceived only by His special mercy, by special empowerment. Continuing, 92.8. Tasmad Akanda Tatvarupo Bhagavan Samanyakara Spurti Lakshana Twena Swapabhakara Sya Brahmano Vyashraya Iti Yuktameva. Therefore, it is appropriate to say that the personality of Godhead, the embodiment of the complete, undivided truth, is the shelter also of Brahman, which appears as his effulgence, by virtue of being his generalized manifestation. Because it's his general manifestation, therefore it's said to be his effulgence. We discussed that already. Ata eva, Yasya prithivi shariram, yasya atma shariram, yasya avyaktam shariram, yasya aksharam shariram, esha sarva bhutantara atma apahata papma divyo deva eko narayanaha. This is from one Upanishad. Subal Upanishad. And it says, who has the earth as his body? Who has the soul as his body? Who has unmanifested nature as his body? And who has the infallible reality as his body? He is the indwelling soul of all beings, devoid of all sin, the one divine Lord, Narayan. So on this list of bodies is the earth, the individual jiva soul, then material nature, and finally the infallible reality. What's that? Brahman, your personal Brahman, is also his body. So the Subala Upanishad talks like that. This identifies Lord Narayan as the soul even of Brahma, referred to by the term akshara. Etat shrutyantaram cha akshara shabdoktasya brahmano pyatma tvena narayanam bodhayati. Uktavatmadi shabda parishyesya pramanena chakarate sham samshubam akshara dushamapi iti payoga drishtya chatra hyakshara shabdena pramaiva vachyam. On the evidence of logical elimination of the reference of the word atma and so on. Yeah, there's a list here, so by identifying each member of that list of bodies of Narayan, you're left with akshara by a process of elimination that must refer to Brahman. Using the word with the same meaning, the word akshara, with the same meaning as in the statement, this made them experience a change both in body and in mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Akshara Jushan. That's about the four Kumaris when they went to Vaikuntha. They underwent a change in consciousness, even though they were akshara jushas. They were already realized, they had already realized akshara, impersonal Brahman. Okay. Commentary. The Subhanu Upanishad echoes the Taittiriya Upanishad. The two are different shrutis, but they are expressions of the same intelligence. Thus, this other Upanishad, I just closed the file. Hold on a second, I'll reopen it. Thus, this other Upanishad tells of the Supreme Soul possessing the many bodies which are his energies. He is identified as Lord Narayana, the original Super Soul, untouched by anything inferior. Anything not understood correctly in connection with him is by definition, papa, evil. Well, okay, interesting. Definition of what's evil is how you understand something. Anything that's understood in connection with Narayana is good. Anything that you are looking at and you're not seeing any connection with Narayana, that's evil. Prithivi, earth, represents all five physical elements. Okay, Prithivi is on the list. What about the other elements? Well, that Prithivi is a representative of all the material elements. The Atma mentioned here is the finite, Jiva. The Avyakta, unmanifest, is the Pradhana, material nature in her original, undifferentiated form. The Akshara, or infallible, cannot be any of these three, because it is listed separately. And therefore it must be Brahman, which is also then a body and soul by Bhagavan. Brahman alone is the perfectly infallible, even though these other three are also akshara in the lesser senses. The jiva and the pradhana also never decay, and the five gross elements do not decay until the universe is completely dissolved at the end. What is it? Dvau bhuta sarva lokesmin, kshara akshara evacha. Two kinds of living entity in this world, the kshara, the fallible, and the infallible. Kutasto kshara, the one who is situated in the center as the infallible. I think the Sri Vaishnavas identify the infallible as Lakshmi. The Madhvites too. But what is our, how does Prabhupada present it? What's the Yakshana?
Eternally liberated soul.
Excuse me for sneezing. Sorry. Yes?
Guru Vishnu, how you can speak about Brahman being a separate body of the Supreme Lord? Because you know that it's so difficult.
Only in the most broad sense of what a body is. The soul, by basic definition, as explained by Ramanujacharya, some material thing is a body and something else is the soul. When the soul knows the body and controls it completely. So, although it's not a separate body, we didn't say separate, but we can say Brahman is known by Krishna and controlled by him. And you could argue, but no, in this case, Brahman is Krishna, it's not separate. You know, if a person knows himself, it doesn't mean he's his own body. So, there's something metaphorical about this. You could argue literally that, yes, it's not his body. Still, here we have the Upanishads calling Akshara the body of Narayana. So we have to accept that in the Upanishads are giving their authoritative opinion that we should consider Brahman, body of Narayana. We have to accept that and try to understand that appropriately. Although you can argue, yes, it is not separate. We're not, that doesn't mean that Brahman is separate from Bhagavan. Maybe that's saying, I don't know the answer, but the Upanishad says so, so we have to accept it and somehow understand it.
The commentary, second last line, says that Jivan Pradhana also never decay. Pradhana also never decay. Jiva is never decay, that is understood, but Pradhana already is not decay.
Pradhana manifests all different varieties. The varieties of Pradhana decay. But Pradhana itself is permanent. Even when the universe is destroyed, the Pradhana is still there. And unchanging, because there's no variety, manifest variety in it. So in that sense, Pradhana is permanent, is eternal. It's one of the eternal entities.
It undergoes transformation and when it goes inside the body of Mahavishnu,
like,
soul never goes transformation.
Pradhan doesn't go inside his body.
Huh?
I don't think Pradhan goes inside the body of Mahavishnu.
Wait,
does it? Maybe it does. And when Mahavishnu starts the creation, the next cycle, Pradhan is over there on the other side of the causal ocean and he glances at her from a distance. So maybe she was in his body for a while, but she didn't stay there. I'm not sure about that. Is it said? Does Bhagavatam say that when the elements go into the body of Mahavishnu, Pradhan does also?
I thought everything goes inside Mahavishnu.
Yeah, but Pradhan might stay on the outside. I'm not sure about that.
What are the categories of
Pradhan? Anyway, Pradhan, even if it goes inside his body, so the jivas also go inside his body, but they're not annihilated. And neither is Pradhan. Pradhan is permanent.
Pradhan is what category? Is it a person or is it matter?
It's both. It is matter. So in that sense, it's impersonal energy. But there's a presiding deity of Pradhan, Durga. She's a living, she's a Shakti. So both are there. Therefore, we talk about the Nimitta Maya and the Upadana Maya, the ingredients and also the active cause, because there's a person there and there's also the dead matter. Two aspects to Maya or Pradhan. But anyway, that's from Madhvacharya, and that's repeated by Baladeva Vidyabhushan, that there's five entities and four of them are eternal, and Pradhan or Prakriti is one of them. And Madhvacharya specifies that Prakriti in her original unmanifest form is eternal, but Prakriti in her transformed forms is not eternal. The transformations of Prakriti are not eternal, but the original Prakriti is. Well, Prakriti and the total material energy is always there. It's not that total material energy is annihilated and we've got to make a new batch of total. No, it's there. The raw ingredients of total material energy are always there, even between creations. Yes.
Also, he said about the Bhagavan, that discussed about the Bhagavan, he said that Mahavishnu he inhales and then all the humans, they go out, they come out from
yes.
The body, his body. So, but at the same time, he must have cleansed his universe before they decided to come out, because they was put out. So, what is that?
Well, the thing is, what comes out of him is empty shells. The empty shells of the universe. The contents of the universe are inside Pradhan, which is outside of him.
They go out and then they mix with Pradhan.
Yeah, Pradhan. Well, that happens after Pradhan emulsifies into Mahatattva. And yeah, it's like these bubbles sort of get mixed up with the Mahatattva gets inside them. That's why I understand.
This element, they have to go through all the gardens of the universe. Somehow they have to go inside, and then just to start working inside.
I don't know how it works. I'm not sure how it works, but something's going on that somehow the elements get inside those bubbles.
Mm-hmm. Because we can suppose that.
Well, the thing is, the coverings are the elements. So the bubbles, before they get covered by the elements, don't have hard shells on the outside. They must be permeable. Elements have managed to get in because the shells are not heavy, thick shells when the elements first enter. They enter and then they form heavy coats on the outside.
I think the concept of the gases in the spiritual gas is very special gas. So gas is not something from the something inside this
body. No, well, where's that said? Because I understand the way it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a picture there, a painting, of Durga sitting on a tiger in the causal ocean. And Mahavishnu at the other side of the causal ocean is glancing at her. She's inside, in the middle of the causal ocean. He's outside, he's glancing in from a distance. Not that he's, you know, a yogi looking inside himself, but turning his eyes inward, he's looking outward. Something at a distance. That's Prakriti, standing some distance away. She becomes dormant. She doesn't get sucked back into his body at the end of creation. She's still there in the causal ocean. Yes?
We can again suppose that Sarvas is a part of the Atma, that this verse of Shesha Pinsha, that he is inside of the living, sometimes he is outside of the living, so he can be inside of his living, and then somehow against the living.
Well, he may be outside, but not in the, I don't think in the form of the Purusha. As a Purusha, he's got a certain size relative to the whole universe. Or relative to the Mahatattva, the Mahapurusha, Mahavishnu. Yes, he encompasses everything. Everything's inside him and outside him. But that's not just in his Purusha form. That's in his all-expanding form. And the Prakriti is inside. If you consider everything as the body of God, and you've got this impersonal, you know, total body of God including everything, then you could say Prakriti's inside that, but she's not inside the body of Mahavishnu. No, I don't think so. You can show me where it says that Prakriti is it's ever inside Mahavishnu. Then I'll understand it wrong, but I don't think that's true.
Also, one good explanation could be that he builds this pradana, then pradana starts working and starts manifesting this universe. And then he becomes
and swallows Prada.
Yeah, and then again it flows.
Whoa, you mean in a single cycle of creation? We read that the end of creation was time to destroy, he inhales and swallows the elements, the universes. You're telling me that at the beginning of creation he glances and then he swallows and spits it out again, something like that.
Last the preparation of the universe to kill them, and then.
But that isn't that at the end of the time to destroy the universe is what he swallows. Okay, but I don't know of that being described, that he swallows in between or at the beginning of creation. What we hear is that the duration of the time it takes for him to breathe in and out is the time that the universe lasts. That's the duration of the universe's existence. If he's doing extra glances in between, that doesn't follow that pattern. Sorry. Okay. Anything else? Yes. Two parts of Prada.
Nimitta becomes Durga.
Yeah.
And Upadana will be the ingredients.
Yeah, the dead body.
So that because Durga is a person, that is always eternal.
No, but Madhvacharya is definitely saying that the dead matter, but in its total form, is eternal.
He's eternal, but we
Because otherwise, why would Prakriti be listed separately, as, you know, mentioned that she's eternal? If she's just a living entity, just the deity.
Yeah.
Oh, Shakti, okay. Anyway, he doesn't say the person and not the matter. Madhva says the total unmanifest nature and not the, the specific manifestations. That's eternal. He doesn't distinguish between life and non-life. He distinguishes between total and partial.
Because we hear the material world is real but temporary.
It is, but there is a temporary something. There is the basic total ingredients that is eternal.
Okay.
Yeah. Because generally the Lord Narayan or Mahavishnu doesn't create out of nothing. The something is, that he creates out of is always there. It's not that he gets an eyelid and he has to make something new, a new batch out of nothing. He doesn't. Okay. Well, evil in the most general sense, that because it's not being seen as connected with Krishna, that's bad. Just the failure to see how it's connected to Krishna, that's evil. No? To not be Krishna conscious is evil. And so when you see anything in an un-Krishna conscious way, that's an evil vision. And the thing seen like that becomes evil. You see, what are you going to see it as? If it's not meant for Krishna's pleasure, then you're going to think the only alternative is to think it's for your pleasure. Or that it's useless. It has no purpose. But the only other purpose, if it can't please Krishna, then you'll have to try to use it to please yourself. So that's evil. That's what I understand from it. Well, I mean, the word is papa. I chose to translate papa as evil. Maybe evil is a little too heavy in English. Because evil sounds like a, you know, it's got bad intentions. But we're talking about dead matter. How does dead matter have any intentions? The evil is in us. We have bad intentions to misuse Krishna's energy. So that's why what you might not like about the word evil. It sounds like that we're ascribing the intentions to the dead matter. But by calling it evil, that means it's considered our fault. If something's not just a mistake but a crime, that means you're responsible and you're going to be blamed for it. So we're blamed for failing to remember Krishna, or it's failed to see the connection of everything to Krishna. It's not just an accident, it doesn't just happen to us. We're considered blamed, and that's our fault we did that. Therefore, that vision is sinful, because it's a crime to do that, to think like that. Okay. All right, we move on. Tata Sri Bhagavata Samkhya Katame Kalo Maya Maye Jive Ityadau Mahapralaye Sarva Vishta Avashishtatvena Brahmopadishya Thus, in his description of Samkhya philosophy, the personality of Godhead indicates, in the words beginning, time merges into the supreme living being, who includes the material nature within himself. Ah, now we put the material nature inside the supreme one. That Brahman is what remains after everything is dissolved in the final annihilation of the universe.
Oh.
Okay. Now, I mean, I asked for a statement. There are statements, it looks like, that say that Avyakta goes back into the Purusha. Yeah. So, but let's see. I'm just looking to see where the statement comes from. This is Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 24. So that's Krishna talking to Uddhava here. Kala Maya Me AGV. Kala, which contains Maya, merges into the Jiva, but that Jiva means the Purusha. Ah, translation of that. Time merges into the supreme living being who includes material nature within himself. Okay. No, we don't capitalize supreme every time. But it's an adjective of a noun that doesn't get capitalized. Living being doesn't get capitalized. We have a limited number of nouns that we capitalize. Supreme only gets capitalized by itself or when it's with a noun that also gets capitalized. Supreme person really shouldn't be capitalized either. Supreme Lord is. Okay, anyway, the sentence isn't finished yet. Tadapi tasya drashtritvam svasmin uktam. Esha Sankhya Vidhi Prokta Samshaya Granti Vedanaha Pratilon Anulomabhyam Paravara Drishamaya Ityatra Paravara Drishiti Anena Soyam Chakra Vivekaha. Well, okay. The personality of Godhead indicates that Brahman is what remains after everything is dissolved in the final annihilation of the universe. Okay, everything gets dissolved, everything goes back into the Supreme Lord, but Brahman is the last thing, it's still there. But even then, he goes on to say that he, capital H, is the witness of that Brahman. So Brahman only remains after everything else is reabsorbed into the Supreme Lord. But the Supreme Lord is looking at Brahman. So he's there. It's not that only Brahman is there, that the personality went away. The person is looking at the impersonal. Personality God is looking at his own impersonal feature. That doesn't make sense? I don't know. Like somebody looking in the mirror. He can see himself. I don't know. I don't know how he does it. I can't say. But it says here, he's the witness of that Brahma.
We have been discussing a long time that Brahman and Krishna is the same person. At the same time, we have any statement which says that Brahman is inferior to him.
Well, okay, how many Supreme Lords are there?
Krishna one.
Okay, but he's got his brother, Balaram. And they're looking at each other.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's the same kind of mystery. Brahman, Krishna is a little bit of Brahman. Brahman is no different. So is Balaram no different from him?
Yeah.
How does that happen? How do you got, you know, we're worshipping Panchatantra, five gods on the altar. I thought we were one theist. It's a mystery. How do you explain it? Okay, let's not lose the trace of what's being said here. Anyway, he goes on to say that he is the witness of that Brahman in the statement, thus I, the perfect seer of everything material and spiritual, have spoken this knowledge of Samkhya, which destroys the illusion of doubt by scientific scientific analysis of creation and annihilation. Well, what does that mean? Well, he says here, by the words, what does that have to do with being the witness of Brahman? Well, let's explain here. By the words, the seer of the spiritual and material, is embedded in this statement, which seems about something else, he calls himself the seer of the spiritual and material. Krishna does. Now, that we're going to look at, that phrase. The following is distinguished. Which is, okay, I still have to look at the Sanskrit. Sankhyam hi gyanam, tat shastram kalu, surupa bhuta tad vishesham, ananusandaya, yat tat surupa matram, tadanim avashishnam vadati. Sankhya is a method of cultivating knowledge. And indeed, that teaching fails to consider the innate variety of the Supreme. It only talks about his mere existence, which remains at that time of annihilation. That is called Brahman. Tad eva cha brahmakyam, tad eva cha prapancha avachina charama pradeshe, prapancha layad vaikunta eva sarupa buddha vishesh aprakashad avishishyamanatvena vaktu yujyate. That is called Brahman. This mere existence of the Supreme Word, that the Sankhya philosophy doesn't really go beyond that. So that mere existence part of the Supreme is called Brahman. And it is appropriate to describe it as the final identifiable portion of the material creation. That means if you follow the Sankhya analysis, that's as far as you get. You now analyze everything and you end up with absolute truth, Brahman. In person. This is not Kapila Dev, this is ordinary Sankhya. Not that there isn't any more, but that's as far as Sankhya can explain. It is appropriate, therefore, if you're using Sankhya analysis, to describe Brahman as the final identifiable portion of the material creation. What remains after the annihilation of the creation? Because unlike Vaikuntha, it does not reveal the particulars of the Supreme's essence. Okay, this is in relation to the material existence. When the material world is destroyed, Brahman remains. Vaikuntha is off somewhere else, and those who are just seeing things with those eyes don't see it. I continue here. Tatcha swavisheshya matram sarupa shakti vishishtena vaikuntastena sri bhagavata pritam iva tatranupuyate iti. In the annihilation, it, Brahman, I'm going to change the it to Brahman because just to make it clear. In the annihilation, Brahman is perceived as if separate from the personality of Godhead. Okay, here's explanation. It's perceived as if it was separate. It's perceived as if separate from the personality of Godhead, who remains situated in Vaikuntha, along with the variety of his internal potency. What is separate about it is that the potencies are missing. The variety is missing. That's the only real separateness between... And Krishna's looking at himself, hey, look at me, I'm impersonal. He's looking at himself. But it really is no difference, but there's a different appearance, a different vision, a different appearance. Okay. Touch. Tadevam nivisheshatvena sparsha rupa rahitasyapi tasya bhagavat prabha rupatvam utpreksya tadabhinatvena brahmatvam vyapadishta. Okay. Thus, even though Brahman has no particular qualities and is so devoid of perceivable touch and form, it is metaphorically conceived of as the bodily effulgence of the personality of Godhead. And it is designated Brahman, the Supreme, because it is non-different from Him. So Brahman actually is non-different from the Supreme, but it gets a separate designation. And not only that, even though it's not supposed to have any form, any perceivable touch or any perceivable form, it's thought of as the bodily effulgence. Now there's something wrong about that. If it has no form, how can it have the form of a bright light? That's contradictory. So therefore it's metaphorical. If you're strict about it, Brahman doesn't appear like anything, any light or any kind of form. Yes. But Brahman is the impersonal aspect of the Lord, and His effulgence certainly is impersonal also. So there's an equivalence there. Yes.
So this certain text which has says that this effulgence is actually the effulgence, this privilege of this effulgence of Krishna's body, Karumbhavi.
It is.
So then again, this metaphor is about...
Well, what it is, the effulgence definitely is, I mean, the Brahmajyoti is the effulgence of Krishna's body. What it isn't completely formless. It's not impersonal enough to be the Brahman that the impersonalists want. It's made out of spiritual sparks. It's full of jivas. It's full of jivas who have complete personalities. That doesn't fit the bill to be, it's not impersonal enough. It's full of persons. So what's illusory, what's wrong, is that it's not really impersonal Brahman, the Brahmajyoti. It's not impersonal. Mm-hmm. It is Krishna, it is Krishna's impersonal, it is Krishna's effulgence, but it's not really impersonal. If you want something really impersonal, then you're going to have to not see anything. There can't be any form.
So, why the statement, thus even though Brahman has no particular qualities, divine or perceivable as a form, that is contradictory to what you are saying?
It's not that there is, Krishna does have his impersonal aspect, but nobody can see it. What we see, the Brahmajyoti, that's actually personal.
So, what is that impersonal
thing? What can you say about it? If you say anything about it, then you've given a quality. Mm-hmm. Even if you say it's invisible, advishatwadi gunakota dharmokini. Whether your Upanishads say that Brahman is invisible, it's describing qualities of Brahman. That's saguna Brahman. To be invisible is a positive quality. So you can't say anything about Brahman. It's the absolute truth, but it's not completely formless anymore as soon as you give a name to it.
So why then equating this Brahman which is no particular qualities divided up?
Because that's the Brahman that we're told about in the Upanishads. We know about it only because the Upanishads tell us about it. Well, because Shastra does that too. So we're trying to understand what the Shastra is doing. So Jiva Goswami's take on it is, when that equation is made, it's a metaphorical equation. That the impersonal equals the effulgence is metaphorical because it can't be literally true. The beautiful woman's face cannot really be the moon. Her face is this big, the moon is a lot bigger. Can't really be the moon. And the effulgence can't really be formless Brahman because it has a form. So the equivalence can't be literal.
I think you can comment it as I say.
Yeah. Well, no, I haven't. Maybe this is the first time it's been said. I don't know. Let's read the commentary. We didn't even get to the end of the sentence. We didn't get to the end of the paragraph, did we?
Yeah.
Okay, but we didn't read the commentary. Did we? No. Let's read the commentary, see if it helps. And if something you think is missing from the commentary, we'll have to write, add it. Commentary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna taught his own version of Sankhya philosophy to Uddhava. In that instruction, he referred to Brahman by the term jiva, to make things even more confusing. This is a rare usage of the word, but it is not possible that jiva in this context could mean finite souls, who are numerous, not one, and who at the time being described were asleep and unmanifest. Lord Krishna, because it says that jiva alone remained, that he was the witness, well, that's not regular jiva. Lord Krishna's version of Samkhya is an authoritative philosophy, not just another speculative probing for truth. It was originally conceived and explained by God himself. Okay, now, impersonal jnana pays no attention to the vishesha, the variety in the supreme. The cultivation of jnana in the Samkhya system, as taught by Bhagavan Krishna and Bhagavan Kapila, unlike the version of Samkhya popular among atheists, gives ample attention to this vishesha, variety, which distinguishes the concept of Bhagavan from that of Brahman. This variety of the Supreme Lord is generally not revealed in the material realm, except for during his occasional avatars. At other times, pure devotees can see Bhagavan's vishesha, but non-devotees cannot. Impersonal transcendentalists only see Brahman as the remnant of creation after its annihilation. So this is the vision, impersonal vision. They only know that Brahman is Janmadhyasayataha, the source from which derive the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the world of duality. But impersonalists cannot use the things of this world in Brahman's service. Before they can obtain their Brahman realization, they need to experience annihilation, at least of their own personal life. They disregard Bhagavan, thinking him to be less than Brahman. In truth, however, he, Bhagavan, is the real Brahman. Impersonal Brahman only borrows that name from him. So here we're saying Brahman is really Bhagavan's name, and it's borrowed by the impersonal Brahman. Okay, now we still have this, if you want an explanation of what, of explain how Brahmajyoti is only metaphorically.
It seems that there are two kinds of Brahman. One is Varshan Brahman and this is Varshan Brahman.
Well, yes, there's two different senses of Brahman. Brahman, like the Vaishnavacharya is explaining Vedanta Sutra, the Vedanta Sutra doesn't talk about Bhagavan, it talks about Brahman. The topic of Vedanta Sutra is Brahman, but actually, it's really Bhagavan. So in the Vedanta Sutra, Brahma really means Bhagavan.
Yeah.
But in other contexts, like in the Upanishad context, there may be a distinction. You know, Brahman versus Bhagavan, impersonal versus personal. So Brahman can be used as a term to talk about only the impersonal, or as a term to talk about the Supreme in general, personal or impersonal. Now, the problem with Brahmajyoti, as I mentioned, was it's not that the Brahmajyoti isn't really the Supreme. The problem is that the Brahmajyoti isn't impersonal. It's not really impersonal. That's why it can't be the same as the impersonal conception of the truth, because it may seem impersonal to you, but if you look closely, you'll find out it's full of persons, the Brahmajyoti.
Persons mean the
jiva? The jivas are in it, yeah. And those jivas are there with complete personalities. Those personalities are dormant, but they still have their mind, senses, and desires. The jivas who are in the Brahmajyoti, they're just asleep. There's nothing impersonal really about the Brahmajyoti. It just looks like that.
So this last statement of the translation is from the viewpoint of the ordinary impersonalist. This even though Brahman has no particular qualities and so is devoid of perceived present form, it is metaphorically considered as the bodily equivalence of the personality of the Brahman. The statement is whose statement?
Okay. Who's doing the metaphorical description?
If the absolute truth is Brahman is a is a person with jivas in him, in such a not in person, then who is saying that as well, impersonal?
I'm sorry, I just was in the middle of typing this sentence, so I didn't catch exactly all of that. Let me go back and look, and then you tell me again. Say it one more time.
So the last statement of the translation.
Yeah. Although Brahman has no particular quality, so is devoid of.
So
yeah.
That is not true, because we understand that Brahman is not impersonal. It's actually a person who says the living entity is indeed not different from Krishna.
Oh, well, okay.
So then who is telling this statement, from whose point?
I would say, Upanishad point of view, Brahman is said not to have any qualities many times in the Upanishads.
But the absolute understanding says that Brahman is actually not
Brahman. Yeah, he's got qualities, but so we understand. That's explained by Jiva Goswami, that when you don't see the qualities, we don't recognize the qualities in the Supreme, then you call it Brahman. It's abstract.
Okay.
It's not looking at the whole picture.
Okay.
But the thing is, so Brahman is the abstracted conception of the Supreme, leaving out all his qualities. And we identify that with the Brahmajyoti. We do it because the Upanishads tell us to do it. Brahma Samhita tells us, yasya prabha.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something not exact about that, not literal, because light is a visible form.
Mm.
And Brahman, as defined, is not supposed to have any form. What to speak of it actually being personal?
So reality means there is no impersonal Brahman, correct?
In reality, there's nothing absolutely impersonal.
Yeah.
What we have is dead matter.
Yeah.
And you could argue that dead matter is impersonal. But the Brahmajyoti is spiritual.
Yeah.
You could say if there's anything dead, it's matter.
Yeah.
But even that is just, it's like, okay, your fingernails and hair are dead matter. Different than the rest of your body, it's not alive. But you could argue otherwise, that it's part of my body just like everything else, just that those cells have died. The cells that make it, the cells of my bones have also died. But they're my cells. And the so-called dead matter is also part of Krishna's body. And seen as connected to Krishna, it's not really dead. It doesn't have its own consciousness, but Krishna has his consciousness, and it's coming from him. So, is even the dead matter completely impersonal? It's part of the person.
Well,
it's dead. When you look at the dead matter, it's separate. Not seeing the connection with Krishna, then it looks like dead matter, impersonal.
So this metaphorically considered as bodily equivalence of personal regarded is only for those who don't see Brahman as non-different from Krishna. Because
yeah.
We understand Brahman is Krishna, it is not impersonal.
But we may understand Brahman as Krishna. We may think that, what is Brahmajyoti? And you just tell somebody, what is Brahman? And we say, Brahman is the Brahmajyoti. Those who realize Brahman, they go to the Brahmajyoti. And you just say, leave it at that. That's naive. Because Brahman is not a visible thing. It's not a form. It's not a place to go. So even devotees can be naive about it, and not clearly distinguish that the impersonal aspect is not supposed to have any qualities.
Yeah, but this metaphorical connection of bodily equivalence.
I'm saying that even Vaishnavas, to keep things simple, resort to that metaphor.
Okay. Otherwise, it is real.
Where do impersonals go? They go to a Brahmajyoti. So we start simplifying matters by identifying Brahmajyoti as Brahman. Although we know that it's not exactly correct to make that identification.
So there is no need. We mentioned that in the commentary, to make more
I think something should be explained here. Two things. How it is that it's only metaphorical, that identification. Yeah. Because Brahmajyoti is not really impersonal. It's not really formless. And then we should explain who's conceiving of this metaphor.
Yeah.
We should clarify that.
Yeah.
And it's actually, even the Upanishads are using the metaphor.
Yeah.
So it's not just a totally wrong conception. It's just not totally literal. Metaphorical language is not wrong. It has its proper use. There are many, many important things you can't say without using metaphors. You can't say everything literal. There aren't enough words in existence to describe everything literally.
Because the rest of the ISKCON general audience of Prabhupada follows, we understand Brahman means to this effulgence of Krishna and three aspects of absolute truth, Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahman.
Yeah.
So it's something kind of.
If we think of Brahman as a separate entity, then we're being naive.
Yes. So,
all right. We're out of time. So we'll have to stop here. I'm sorry, this two paragraphs were tough. Some may have been a little confused. And therefore, if you have any questions, remember them. And tomorrow, before we start the class, we can have some further discussion. If there's anything you think needs to be clarified before we move on, let's make sure we got all this, especially the last two paragraphs, whether we understand them or not. If you don't, then you can ask about it tomorrow morning before we start the class. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.